Conservative to consume. Conservative constituents. It was no consolation to Miss Elizabeth that she was losing weight. The constituents of her company were very conservative, and they had constricted her to a consistent and constrained diet. She had considerable power herself, but they had consolidated together in order to keep her weight at a constant level of decline, so as to best increase sales of the clothing line they sold. Her thinness was becoming conspicuous, however, and television consultants were beginning to tell her to consume more food, for God's sake. They were forming a sort of loose consortium of considerate people willing to console her and give her positive consultation. This constituted a mutiny to her company, however, and they were planning to lock her in a conservatory to control her before anyone else could. That was when Miss Elizabeth began to slip more and more into depression. The consistency of her public appearances declined, and people began to construct all kinds of theories as to what was happening. Soon, she disappeared altogether. All of the consultative people had not helped. Her constituents had won. When Miss Elizabeth passed away in her conservatoire, and company sales declined drastically, even the most conservative constituents acknowledged that they might have made a mistake. As Miss Elizabeth's younger sister, Miss Delphine, stepped in to take over her sister's share in the company, however, the constituents convinced her, as well, that she needed to lose weight in order to boost sales. Miss Delphine sadly began the same slide that had taken her sister. No one had learned anything.
Consumer to contractual. A rant against consumerism. Consumerism has taken over the globe. Contemporary culture tells us that we have a contractual obligation to live our lives as perpetual consumers each day and every day of our life. Always wanting more, always wanting the best. When one contemplates the absurdity of this, however, one realizes that international corporations seem to hold real people in contempt. It appears to be their contention that a company's success is more important than containing global problems that reflect the cost of consumerism. Many contend that we have already contaminated the world beyond repair. Containers of oil burst and pollute the seas with contaminants each day. The continental scale of global warming, the greenhouse effect, and the hole in the ozone layer all have shocked us. But no one has a contingency plan that includes controlling large international corporations or changing how we consume. In this context, consumers must no longer remain content to feed the giants with their hard-earned money. Contact must be established to open new lines of communication and education. Contracts that are bad for the world must be broken. If there is not a global contraction of our thirst for more of what we don't need, this continuous burden on planet Earth will have unbearable consequences. Consumers need to learn to be satisfied with enough, that there is no need for more. Be satisfied with what you have, figure out what you don't need, and let international corporations know that you don't need their products anymore. Consumerism is not healthy for you. Consumerism is not healthy for our planet.
Contradict to CORE, the Convention Center Coordinator. No one knew Carrigan's history. Not even his employers at the Convention Center. Carrigan had escaped conviction for a serious crime. It was very controversial at the time, and the public tried to convince the court afterwards to have Carrigan wear a copper device so that they could always know where he was. The controversy was great, but the court of law said that he was innocent and that it was not conventional to monitor an innocent man freed from conviction. That would contradict his right to freedom. Now, Carrigan was just the conference convener, responsible for coordinating the daily events at the center. He was good at his job, contributing daily to the improvement of operations. But his contribution was not so great that he was always busy. He had, in fact, perhaps too much free time. That was when he converted his garage into a workshop for auto repair. But it was only a contrived workshop, which conveyed a sense of good business. In the back were all the tools Carrigan needed to commit his next crime. His coordinator position, as well, was only a cover. Carrigan was a true criminal. That was why he was so good at the convention center. Carrigan's coordination skills were superb. He was an expert at masking his true identity from the public. And he was excellent at conversing with people. They all believed him to be a nice guy. When crimes resembling the ones that Carrigan had almost been convicted of began occurring again, not even the police thought to look at Carrigan again. He had been smart. They had known him then as always using a wire. Now he used a cord. The difference was subtle, but the police thought it was the core of the matter.
Corporate to couple. A counterproductive attempt. The corporation was too close to the city council for its own good. The relationship was cozy with the suspicion of corrupt dealings too likely. It was becoming costly. The corporation's public approval was declining. Mike Danner, an accountant in the office, could see this and he decided he had to try and fix it. As he walked down the corridors of the Cosmopolitan building where he worked, he knew that an argument with the president would be counterproductive. He had to find a way of counseling the president that he needed distance from his counterpart in the local government. They were an odd couple, he and the mayor. Corrective measures were needed. But Mike Danner never thought that there would be any true corresponding crime. Counterfeit money was being produced in the back offices of the corporate parking lot and shipped to the city council in corrugate boxes where the mayor would countersign their authenticity. The corpus of the council knew this. He was walking into the fire. The next day, when his body was found with his cortex peeled from his head, the press never thought to correlate his murder with the controversy surrounding the corporation and the city council. Instead, they created a cosmetic motive for a local drug dealer to be put in prison on false charges. Chief of police was involved in the counterfeit deal as well, and he wasn't about to sacrifice the college money for his three kids for some curious corporate office boy.
Coupon to Criterion. Under a crescent moon. When the moon was crescent-shaped, people began to disappear. First it was an old lady out late one night counting coupons. Then it was a courier, crisscrossing town to make requested deadlines. And finally, it was a local craftsman, whose remains were found next to a crack that led to a mysterious crater. It seemed that there was no criterion by which this criminal attacked. But the cleanup crew was beginning to think that it was not a person, but a creature. When the crisis became known throughout the small town, all but the most courageous left to visit relatives. News coverage was intense. The local economy was crippled, and more than several young couples made a covenant to marry by the end of the week. The credentials of the local police were also no longer good enough. The FBI was called in. That was when the murders stopped. As the weeks went on, and reporters no longer cared about covering what was once a major story, people came crawling back to their homes. To the credit of many, nighttime activities began to become common again. Life seemed to be returning to normal. After a month had passed since the last murder had occurred, however, and the moon became a crescent again, the creature came creeping out of his hole. When a man walking in a park bent down to fix a crease in his pants, he had no idea that the deaths were about to start all over again, starting with his.
Critic to curative. A culinary conversation. This dish also has curative properties, said the renowned culinary expert, Dr. Jane Woolwyn. This is the crowning achievement of my recent cruise through the Hawaiian Islands. Mmm, it's fabulous. Now it's critical that you give me the recipe, said the food critic, evaluating the meal. No, sir. I know you're on a crusade to expose the secrets of fine cuisine, and you're quite cunning. But this recipe is staying in my head. You are one culprit who I know I can't trust. Oh, and don't forget to add this spice cube to the soup, replied Dr. Woolwyn with a smile. But I've worked so hard on cultivating our relationship. Can't you tell me what it is here? I thought we were at a crossroads and beyond all that worry about secrets, reports and all of that. Don't be so cumbersome. Well, I'm beyond those reports. But I looked in my crystal ball yesterday and you are not. Okay, but this crust is wonderful. and I like your beautiful crockery. Where did you pick this up? In the Hawaiian Islands, like I just said. But my trip culminated on Ahu Island. So maybe you can go there if it's so crucial that you have the same crockery. Fine, I'll take your cue and visit Hawaii. Thanks again anyhow for the good food. I'll be sure to write a favourable report about your cooking, said the critic as he began to leave. See, I said you were still reporting. I never disagreed, my darling. I never disagreed.
Curb to dazzle. A cow on a road. It was just after dawn when people are opening their curtains to let the light in when the dairy cow accidentally walked onto the road. The strange black pavement dazzled him so much that he was curious to step off of the curb onto the street. A man on a cycle drove by with a damning look, but he didn't stop. Then a cute girl with a backpack filled with teaching curriculum came around the curve. Now, customarily, she never stopped for anyone, and she was actually quite cynical about all of this help your neighbor stuff. But when she saw the cow on the road, she decided to cure him of his confusion and direct him back onto his field. Her touch on the cow's side, however, felt like a dart to the cow, and he jumped away quickly. His rear foot slipped on a datum mark, and he tipped over into the damp grass. An old piece of cutlery was lying on the ground where he fell, and he started to bleed. The girl did the best she could to help the cow up, but she fell to the ground herself as well. What a mess, she thought to herself. I will add the data about this experience and remember to never help a cow walking on a road again. Even the cynic, the girl stood up, abandoned the cow, and walked away. The cow, meanwhile, stood up by himself, noticed that he had stopped bleeding, and quietly went back to his field. He would remember to avoid strange black pavements in the future.
Deadline to decrease. God speak. As the dean stood on the deck of his boat, he noticed a piece of decayed debris floating by. I have deceived myself, he thought. My decline has simply shown me that my inner character is really like that piece of debris. But I am decomposing on the inside. I fill my life with decorative nonsense, he declared to the open sea. Now my debt is too great, and the drug dealer I owe money to is coming to visit me with deadly intentions. It was a decade of excess, but my deadline has come. I am not a decent person, and I know it. God, why did you have to make me this way? Let your desires decrease, a rumbling voice from heaven said. And let a desire for me increase in you. Do not decorate yourself on the outside with what does not matter. Decorations fade. It is what is on the inside that counts. Be holy as I am holy. As the dean stood in awe that God had really spoken to him, he almost didn't decipher what God was saying. Do you mean that I should simplify my life? He yelled. and there was no more answer. God had spoken once, and he would not speak further. The dean went back into the boat and was about to begin his usual decompression by having a glass of vodka. He stopped, however, and decided to listen to God. "The first thing I will do," he thought, "is selling this boat."